You're listening to CivCast on the Kyle Dempster Studios Network. Support us on Patreon at patreon.com/CivCast. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to a new episode of CivCast. My name is Kyle, and I'm joined here this week by my co-host, Dan. Hello, Dan.
Hello. I did that British. That's weird.
I was waiting for some sort of quote of the week, but fail. Okay. And Wouter. Hello, Wouter.
Hello. Roses are red. Violets are blue. Alexander is coming to kill you.
Oh.
I mean, that's not even iambic pentameter. I'm rattled. I'm done.
He's triggered everyone. Dan has been triggered and he has to quit. Let's start this episode off. Instead of getting rid of Dan for his being triggered and all of that, instead we're going to give a huge thank you to our patrons over on patreon.com/CivCast because you guys hit our goal needed. We are going to start live streaming the show every Sunday. That's about noon Mountain Time, 11 a.m. Pacific, and something Eastern Time. You can figure it out. Use a calculator, man! So anyway, we're going to get this up on both YouTube and Twitch. So we're going to do a dual live stream. So whatever platform you prefer, you're going to be able to catch it live. And afterwards, these episodes are going to be recorded for YouTube hosting. So they're going to go up there in the archive. You'll be able to check in on them at any time. But again, wanted to give a huge shout out to our patrons that made it happen because your donations really, really pay off, really help us out. And we hope that what we're giving you in return is awesome as well because we look at it as kind of a little reward for whomever is donating. So, Wouter, that means we got one of our first people pledging at a higher level, and they're going to be joining in the monthly multiplayer challenge. You excited to start organizing that?
I'm super excited. I always like to play multiplayer, and especially with somebody who's supporting our show. I'm really looking forward to that. That's going to be fun.
I'm just very excited. This is really, really cool. I think it's going to help get the name of the show out there to even more people. And I've kind of always wanted to do a live streamed talk show thing. So this is going to be perfect for us. Definitely a lot of Civ players over on YouTube already. So it's going to be cool to kind of break into that sphere and hopefully get some people that way. I don't know. Overall, just super exciting. And I'm seeing more and more people connect in our community, which is the most important thing to me. Over on our subreddit, which is r/CivCast, we actually had some people recommend, as you know, and Dan's going to talk about this in a second, but this month's CivCast challenge was all about playing on a team with an AI. But I mean, one of the people over there was like, we need to set up a multiplayer CivCast challenge where we can kind of buddy up with one another. Because it looked like some of them were already doing that from what I saw. So that's really, really cool. I'm glad you guys are connecting and making some friends in the community. That's really what keeps the show alive is people just, chatting and sharing opinions. So please head over to the subreddit. It continues to grow in readers. Every week we are getting at least about 5 or so new readers in there, which is really, really cool. Feel free to share anything and everything. We'd love to share more Civ news, but we're still waiting for Firaxis to tell us who these awesome new leaders are. But we're going to talk a little bit more about that later. Dan, in the interim, you want to kind of recap the CivCast challenge and anything new that might have come up in the past week?
Sure. The Reddit is updated as of today, and we have some posts from the last couple of days. So shout out to, among others, VT Matt and Pendin, who finished it and penned us some super long reviews both in the Reddit and outside of it. So I'm looking forward to sharing those in more detail next week. As Kyle said, it is the last week of the CivCast challenge. It runs until May 27th. And as was also said, we are doing a 2v2v2 multiplayer game with the AI this time around to give that a shot. Your Civ choice is any. And I do see that, from the Reddit, a lot of people have been trying a lot of different Civs, which is fantastic. I mean, try something new, try something that you haven't done before, try something that maybe you would be afraid to try in a serious game or a game where you're really gunning for some kind. I don't know. I guess they're all serious games. I don't know what the heck I'm talking about. Your opponents are random or any of your choice. Your map is continents. Your victory type is cultural, and as always, we encourage you to keep track of cultural victories using your Imgur posts, using your whatever visual medium you have, because Kyle includes a lot of those pictures in his Twitter Moments compendium at the end of the month. And I know there's a few cool ones that I've seen on the subreddit this month, but also it gives you a chance to listen to Wouter's cultural focused strategy session. And I do think that Wouter is going to mention something similar for his next strategy session coming up. The map size is standard. The difficulty is Emperor. And I do know we had some questions about this because I think there was a bit of a mix-up as it pertains to how you set the difficulty for the AI. Kyle, do you want to explain that, what the questions were? You knew them a little better than I did.
Yeah, so we just had some people curious about how they were actually to set up the AI in the game. And it's something we really didn't think about too much in advance, that we that was really a thing. It's weird how this works. I didn't want to go into too much detail here, but to kind of summarize for you guys, leave it standard. So you're going to adjust yourself to playing as an emperor. And if you've already done this differently and completed the challenge and posted a story about it, do not worry about it. This is kind of our bad. But put yourself on emperor difficulty. And then if you didn't adjust the AIs, that's perfectly fine. It's a little bit weird how Firaxis has this in the setup menu. So if Dan, so if I'm hosting a game and Dan and Wouter jump into the multiplayer game with me, and let's say that I set us all to Chieftain, the very easiest in the game, we're all getting massive buffs. But if we adjust the AI's difficulty, if we put them at Chieftain, they're actually not strong. So whereas if we're all Chieftain, we're getting bonuses, they're actually getting negatives. So for anyone that adjusted it differently and already did the challenge, do not worry. We're going to count it as is, chalk it up as our bad for this month. But if you can, just leave the, if you're just creating your game this week, just leave the AIs naturally, however they come in there. We don't want to make it too hard for other people. We're assuming most people didn't adjust those settings, so we kind of want to go with the non-adjustment. Just make yourself emperor and call it a day.
Yeah, there you go. So in addition to that, we're looking at speed and resources as standard. And as I said at the start, it is a 2v2v2 team game where, yes, you will need to have your teammate locked in from the start of the game. I know someone asked that question last week. So I think that about covers the parameters. We're in the last week, so it's not one I don't think that should take too long. I know that Wouter had a bit of an experience with his, and I looked at a Reddit post here where someone said they finished theirs in like turn 369, which seems exorbitant, but you know, it's not meant to be one that's going to be this marathon. However, if you get into a deep knockdown scrap out kind of battle with the other civs or with the other teams, it certainly can. But because it's a cultural victory, I guess that kind of changes, I don't know, it changes what direction, what timeline you're gonna be looking at. So folks, make sure that you use the hashtag CivCastChallenge on Twitter if you're sharing these. If you're not on Twitter, you can pop over to our subreddit, reddit.com/r/CivCast, and you will see stickied at the top of the page the May CivCast Challenge thread, and you can post in there. And the three of us check that relatively often. I mean, I check it a couple times a week, and certainly at the end of this week when I'm putting together all of the stories. So yeah, that's that.
Excellent. One thing, I don't know if you said this, Dan, maybe you did, maybe you didn't, but if you're going to put it on Twitter, make sure you use the hashtag CivCastChallenge actually in your final victory post. And it seems like we have more people moving over to the Reddit, which is, I think, a good thing. It's better for conversation. So if you guys are over on Twitter, but if you use both platforms, it seems like, it's like Patreon's the place to talk. It seems like Reddit is the place to kind of have these more in-depth conversations. Twitter, you know, you're limited to the 140 characters. That can be a little bit tough to tell your story. But Reddit, you can just talk for days. So that's about it for that. You're going to go into our kind of main discussion here this week, which was a find by you, Dan. Is that right?
Sorry?
Your find?
I think so, yeah. I found it on Reddit.
My computer's going crazy and highlighting everything in the Google Doc. So thank you, computer. We are going to be looking at another tier list because these are always big hits. I noticed on Twitter a lot of people were interacting with the ones that we shared last week. So this time around, we're looking at one that is ranking each of the civilizations in the game by what they do best at. There's an S tier, an A tier, B, C, and D. So you've got best, great, good, average, bad. And it's looking at them again as domination, science, culture, and religion victory. And this one's very, very cool. We're going to have links to this both on our Reddit, and we'll shoot this out on Twitter again, as always. This one's super, super cool. I like that it tells you which civilization is best on which maps. So, for example, it breaks it down by Teddy Roosevelt being really good in continents maps, Pangaea maps, and inland sea maps. I just thought that was a nice little twist here. Valter, do you kind of want to chat a little bit about what we're going to look at here in terms of who's best at what victories? Want to give us a little overview?
Yeah, so you have, of course, some people are naturally, when you look at the bonuses and the kind of stuff that they get, they gravitate towards a certain kind of victory type. And those are, of course, then in the higher tier lists of those victory type. While they might, for example, get no bonuses to religion at all, which means they just lag behind a little bit in that victory type. And I think there's a lot to be discussed about opinions and stuff like that. And I think we should go through them by one, like every victory type first. And I think, do you want to take it away on the domination victory type? Because that sounds something like you like to do, Kyle. Right?
Okay. You know me. Cultural, I like. Religion, no way.
You love.
Shush. That's not true. Don't tell lies about me, Dan. And science, here's an embarrassing thing, guys. I like the idea of a science victory, but for some reason, I don't think I've ever once played a science victory. Like, ever. Ever.
Hey.
Ever. Which is weird. I've even like set them up, but just never followed through. So anyway, looking at domination, again, we'll just do this breakdown. We're all going to share our thoughts on different things. But starting off, the domination victory tier, the best tier, the S tier, is led by the Aztecs, Macedonians. We got Japan in there, Rome. We got Gilgamesh and what's her face? Tamiris is in there. Couldn't remember her name for a second, which I think these kind of all make sense for starters. Because for domination victory, I mean, you're really, these guys are, how do I want to say this? These guys are the most focused towards domination in a stereotypical sense. The Aztecs, obviously a very warring civilization, and you want to be pumping out military units from the start because with their ability to capture builders, that means you don't have to be worrying about builders so much. Or when you capture a unit, you actually get a builder, I should say. So that's cool and makes sense. Alexander of Macedonia, absolutely geared towards a domination play. I mean, he's actually getting science when you're pumping out units from the encampments, which means that you're actually getting some of your research done while you're building an army. So that's awesome, on top of having, you know, a bunch of unique units of his own. Japan is some, this is where I want you guys maybe to chime in on Japan, because though they have the samurai and they get the advantage fighting on the coastal terrain, is that really enough that you guys think that he stays in the top tier of domination, or is there something I'm missing thinking about him trait wise?
I completely agree. I think Japan doesn't belong in the S tier over there.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking at it. If you amalgamate it with his map types that where he's strongest in, like, I think we have islands listed, fractal and continents. I mean, where you have more coastal area, he would certainly be stronger. But I agree with both of you. I don't see it as being a particularly overwhelming sieve, really, in any direction, but not in domination.
Especially if, since he put Norway on the A tier, then definitely Japan belongs there as well. Because Norway has the same kind of deal Japan has with, like, more coastally stuff. And I think Norway is better at it than Japan, actually.
That's kind of what I was thinking. And here's an interesting twist. And maybe this just says that Alexander is, quote unquote, that good. But for looking at these, Dan, that was a great point tying in where they do best map-wise. Japan has three listed. So he's got continents, he got fractal, and he has islands listed. So that's three maps that he suggested to be best at. But Alexander is in that top tier, who I agree, I think Alexander is very, very strong. But he is only listed as being good at Pangaea, which I don't know if that's necessarily true. I mean, inland sea, I could very well see him being powerful there because there's a lot of land.
The thing is, what it is stronger in, it's not necessarily best at. So if you are playing on that map, this leader will have an edge up compared to other maps, so to say. So it's not necessarily that leader is the best at that map. It's just they get more out of their inert advantages,
that's,
which is
a fair clarification there, Wouter. Still, I don't know if that matches up, though. I mean, really? Is he supposed to be that not keyed towards continents and inland sea? And I mean, fractal maybe, because it's just so random, but like, I don't know. I feel like that's a weird comparison to, well, I guess maybe what, to finish my thought on that, maybe what I'm trying to say is, I don't know if those weights would necessarily be equal. Like if Japan is so good at a couple different maps, or, you know, gets bonuses from so many, why are they up in that tier if Alexander only gets his time to shine on one specific map?
I think Japan is completely misplaced there. I think they at best should be B tier.
I would agree with that.
Also, the samurai, we've talked about placement of their unique unit, and they suffer from the same problem that Norway does. Their unique unit is in military tactics, which is a tech that leads to nowhere, and most people skip it because it's just not worth researching. You would rather research something that leads you to better things. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's just a little bit brutal. I don't know. I don't think I'd put him up there. Like, I mean, his tree of getting units is a bit brutal to actually make him a powerful unit or a powerful leader. Rome, I could see Rome being up there. Legions are cool units. Rome in this game is traditionally a very expansive empire building. Tamiris with her double horse archers, when she builds one, she gets two. That is very domination focused. And Gilgamesh,
not even only horse archers, also light cavalry.
Oh, that's all around, light cavalry. Huh?
Yeah, so that's even better. I when I play Tamiris for domination, just go nuts on light cavalry. And
so she's very much suited. I agree with that. I think she deserves to take best tier there. I mean, if you're getting two units for one, that's a huge bonus. And then we got Gilgamesh there, who is very powerful with their war carts, right? That's what his unit is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those things crush and destroy. So I think I'm in agreement. It sounds like most of us are. Dan, did you have any rebuttals in there?
I mean, I think if we're reading this correctly from left to right, too, and where he ranks it within the tier list, he has the Aztecs at the very, very top of the domination tier. And I would probably agree with that. I see the Aztecs, the Sumerians, and the Scythians as being the three best at domination victories. I have a bit of a beef with who he has in his bad/D tier, and I think you guys know where I'm going with this.
I'm gonna guess, is it Russia?
This dude has Peter and Russia in his bad tier for domination. And yeah, okay, like I don't err on the side of domination victories with Russia, but bad tier behind like Gandhi, behind
nukes, bro, nukes.
Qin Shi Huang, like, give me a break here. I mean, maybe one of you can enlighten me as to why this is the right call, but I mean, I played Russia the most, and although, okay, granted, I would put them much higher in a religious or science victory context, bad tier for domination is nonsense.
I agree. The Cossacks are really good units. They can move after attacking, hit and run style. That's perfect.
Yeah, I have to agree. I think that's a little bit silly to put down there. Who would you move actually down there if you had to replace it? Who are you bumping down there? The C tier, the average tier, has a couple that are meh. I mean, Egypt, I don't know. She loves her military strength, but all her units seem to bounce off when she attacks me.
Gandhi, because you want to be at peace when you're with Gandhi. You don't want to be going for a domination victory. So yeah. I don't understand the logic of having India above Russia in a domination tier list.
The Varu are really strong, though.
That's fair.
Really powerful. I would move Cyrus probably down a bit as well. Not necessarily to the D tier, but the Immortals are really bad, and the only advantage that he has is the extra movement, which is really great. Yeah, maybe to B tier then.
Yeah, Cyrus is in the A tier, the great tier right now.
The great tier. Also, shout out to Victoria. You made it into the great tier, so good on you.
And that makes sense.
That does. She's got a lot of strong units. I mean, those redcoats are nice and powerful fighting on foreign continents, and those sea beggars just tear through things. I mean, if you're playing them correctly and you have a Venetian arsenal by chance, good luck, everybody, because they're invisible until you're next to them, too. So, yeah, she has some strong naval on her side. I think we kind of touched on this, though, but Norway, I don't love that they are even in the A tier there. We've talked, I mean, they do have some, their berserkers are glass cannons. So again, we've kind of said that those don't really matter that much in a way. Also, since the game's not necessarily told hugely towards naval victories and such at the moment, you're kind of going to be lacking a bit with Norway. So I could especially, see them. Go ahead, Wouter.
Especially since most capitals and doing domination victory is capturing capitals will not be on the coast, and then your ships will not help you so much. So
yeah, that is a great point. Germany, I think, is pretty well suited on the great tier, though with their huge production bonuses and such, they're not really that strong in their unique units. I mean, they have the U-boat submarine sort of thing going on, but I don't really know. Even when I play Germany, I forget to build that unit at the time that it's appropriate. Like, that's just my brain's not usually trying to go that route. Like, if I play Germany, I'm usually lacking a navy. So I mean, that unit is probably an Achilles heel for him, but I think the production that he gets from the Hansa and such, that probably solidifies him having a great tier.
Also, the extra military policy slot.
Yes. Let's not forget about that. I mean, that is massive. And let's see who Philip's in there. Do you guys agree with Philip being on the great tier?
Actually, I had this a little bit of a discussion about on the Reddit, I think, a couple of weeks ago, where I said that Philip, if you do it well, combine some conquistadors with some missionaries, you have very, very powerful units. Because somebody was like, yeah, Spain is not good enough and they might need a buff. And I was like, if you combine conquistadors with missionaries, you can whoop people's ass in that era. So
Yes, very well put, Wouter.
I mean, one that I wanted to give a quick shout out to, I would move the Polish Jadwiga up from the C tier, the average tier. I think that Golden Liberty is an OP ability. And just that alone, along with the Winged Hussars, which I love, would have her at least in the good tier, if not the great tier. And I see her as being better at a domination play than like a Teddy Roosevelt or a John Curtin or Philip, frankly, and I've played two Philip games pretty deep.
Yeah, John Curtin being B tier, is he really geared towards domination plays? Correct me if I'm wrong, because I admit I haven't played him to death yet, but like, he seems a little bit more, he's more defensive with his one ability that, you know, boosts your production. And sure, that means you can mount a strong counter offensive, but I don't know. I guess he gets a bonus from capturing cities too. Is that right? Or liberating them? I forget what his thing is.
I believe you get a bonus when you liberate a city for a couple of turns. 100% production, that's not nothing.
Yeah.
But the digger, that's a pretty good unit.
Oh, yeah. That's it. So it is if you liberate a city. So in the past 10 turns, receive declaration or liberate. But if you're liberating, that's not necessarily, that's kind of counterintuitive to a domination play, kind of.
Yeah, that doesn't have to do much with domination because you need somebody else to capture something first and then you can liberate it. But the digger, I think if you put Japan on that level, that high level because of the extra combat strength they get on the coast, well, the digger gets double that on the coast. And if you're on a different continent, they get another extra 5, so I think this digger is better than Japan's whole bonuses.
Wouter, I just wanted to say you're saying it wrong, dude.
Oh God, here it goes.
Okay, please, Dan, do it for us.
Digger.
Well, everyone, you've been offended for the day, and by all of our Australian listeners, it was nice having you for as long as you lasted, like 4 episodes since Dan said it last. I don't know. I don't know what that is.
You probably have more since the Civ is actually in the game, but
hey-o.
They know I love them. They know I love them. I think their Civ is just wonderful, both in real life and in the game.
Aw, how touching. Do you want to tell us, Dan, you were taking science, is that right?
Yeah, because science is the one I tend to err on the side
of. Tell us all about it.
I think that you guys would probably agree that in Civ 6, there aren't actually a lot of Civs that are hyper-geared towards science. And so on this tier list, there are only 2 Civs in the S tier or the best tier for science, as opposed to 6 for domination, 4 for culture, and 5 for religion. Those 2 in the S tier for science are understandable, and they are China and Arabia. Now, I've been going kind of back and forth in my head on which of these two I think is better for science. I do love playing Saladin and playing Arabia because I mean, such a huge fan of the kind of folding in between science and religion that he could do, and the pure snowball aspect of that that you could get if you play it right in the early game. But I have such a soft spot for the Chinese in Civ 6, and you know they play a lot like the Koreans played in Civ 5. For those of you who had a chance to play them, in that they are the perfect Civ to play isolationist and to play insulated. I mean, you could build your Great Wall, you get your Eureka bonus, which is, what is it, 60%? Yeah. Eureka bonus? Yeah, 60%. You get your bonuses to ancient and classical era wonders. And although Voucher does disagree a bit, I still do think that the Great Library is extremely necessary in this game to a science victory, although it's not like mandatory like it was in Civ 5. And just all around, I find the Chinese, A, to be a fantastic Civ in general, but B, to just be so well geared towards a science victory. And it's so fun to play them with the science victory too, because once you reach that mid game and these Eureka bonuses start hitting hard and you start churning out, you know, your universities and you start churning out anything pertaining to science, it really starts to snowball and you're getting techs every like 3 or 4 turns. And to me, that's a lot of fun. The one science game that I was able to be victorious in was with China. So, I mean, they're well worth a science play. I agree with the two of these in the S tier. I don't know if you gentlemen think that anyone else is deserving of being the S tier for science. I'm not so sure. I mean, I have a soft spot for Peter and Russia. He's in the great tier, the A tier, and he's first listed in the great tier. So he's right on the cusp there. I tend to go religious when I play Russia. You know, their Mother Russia ability is not inherently science-based. Of course, you get the bonus when you are... it's with a trade route to the other civilizations, if I'm not mistaken,
yep.
Right?
Yeah.
So you get the bonus when you're... the science bonus when you're trading the civs that are ahead of you. And that's great. Of course, it also means that you have to play on the back foot. And you basically have to deliberately play on the back foot, which I think is the only thing that holds it back from being great. If it was the opposite, where it's like, well, you know, civs that you are ahead of in science, you get a bonus if you're trading with them. Well, hell, it'd be the best science civ in the game.
You and your tribal techs. Teach me something.
Exactly. But you know, I guess that wouldn't be historically accurate. For the S tier, the best tier, I agree with this. Maybe the one Civ who I'd consider bumping up would be Peter. I don't know what you guys think, though.
I know that Valter's going to make an argument here. Do you want to go ahead, Valter?
There are two that I want to bump up, both to the S tier. And the one that is, in my opinion, a little bit more obvious is Germany.
Called
because production is king. And to actually win the game, you have to push a lot of production into the science part. On higher difficulties, you're going to be racing against the AI. And extra production is necessary. The second one is Brazil. And I'm actually surprised that they're only on the B tier because they definitely belong on the S tier. They get extra adjacency bonuses for their campus with rainforest tiles, which can yield quite a lot of science in the beginning. Plus, they get extra great people, which means more great scientists, which will also help you quite a lot. And also, that also means more great engineers who can give you the plus 100% production bonus or the 1500 production towards one of the space projects. Those are really, really important. And I think that qualifies them to be S tier.
I think that's very fair. I don't even know if I really want to move somebody just yet looking at this list, but I really do want to defend Alexander because that's something I'm a huge fan of. Like I mentioned it a little bit when talking about the domination victory, but I really like the idea that he can be building units and getting tech from that at the same time, getting some extra science from producing those units. I mean, that lets you be doing, you know, you can focus on a military and go out and conquer, but at the same time on the home front, while you're spending that production building these units, you're also getting science out of it, which just, it seems very cool to me. It seems like you can really be going for two plays at the same time. I mean, if you have a lot of, if you kind of especially split some of your cities so that you're doing like some that are really heavily production focused and therefore pumping out these units. And then if you have some maybe more cloistered cities that are doing some more science on their own, that just seems like a very good hand in hand where you can I don't know, if someone's beating you in the science game, you have a massive military now to go out and crush them, while at the same time, you're getting that bonus science from doing the military portion.
That's like the opposite of a march for science, I think, Kyle. It's like, well, if they're beating you in science, just go destroy them.
Well, go ask the Soviet Union about marching and troops and science and all of that. They like to march troops around, so, you know. Not all marches are peaceful, Dan. Sometimes you just like to move nuclear weapons down Red Square. I don't know. Go ask your friends at Russia.
That's fair.
let me see here who else is on these lists that I might move up. Victoria, I kind of agree with her placement. Teddy's not that huge into science, huh? Does he have any real bonuses for that? I never think of him.
No, and that kind of speaks to why, if we look at this list, I mean, the more than half of the civs in the game are on either the average C tier or the bad D tier for science victories. And I guess that's proportional to the ones they have at the top, because there is a real separation in a science victory between a civ like China or a civ like Arabia and then a civ like Egypt or France or Norway, who have absolutely nothing to do with science victories. And if you somehow manage to pull it off, it's because you tripped and fell into it, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that does
sound right.
Or just right.
Good play.
People find can play Valter, well. Or just good play.
Oh, gosh. speaking of Valter, do you want to tell us a little bit about, or anything else in the science before we wrap it up?
Real quick. Yeah. Sorry, I wanted to mention. Is Gilgamesh in the A tier, the great tier, just because of the ziggurat, do you think?
Oh.
I think that might be it. And that would be my choice of actually putting it down. Because I have said this before on the show. I'm not that much of a fan of building these improvements special to a civilization. Some of them are good, and this one is one of the better ones, but I don't think it's good enough to give him a great tier. I would rather move Pericles up, actually, because with that extra wildcard policy slot and the extra culture is really useful for the science tier, because there are some really, really great later policies that help you tech up faster. So I would say Pericles going up and Gilgamesh going down.
That sounds about right. I have to say, Congo seems pretty good on the B tier. I really like them. Speaking of how you don't love a lot of unique tile improvements, I have to say, still, Curtin's, his outback stations, and I think the Congo's, Mbanza's, the little neighborhood replacements, those two are my top favorite tile replacements.
Oh, yeah, the outback stations, those are, the tile improvements are great. And the Mbanza, that's a district replacement, so that's not a...
You're right, huh? That's... You know what, but... And you're totally right in the way you say that, because it's, like, factually that way, but at the same time, the district, you can continue to build it, so it's like... I get what you're saying, Valter. I just like that that thing gives you a lot for just being able to plop down more housing slots. But yeah, they seem fair fit right in the middle. That kind of wraps it for me for science. Valter, do you want to tell us a little bit about religion here?
Sure, because religion is my favorite victory, actually, even on higher difficulties. I know a lot of people hate it because they see huge swarms of enemy missionaries and apostles coming, and I just love it and kill them all like a good religious inquisition. But there are a couple, of course, that are more catered to religion. And I like Dan said, Peter is really great at religion. The Lavra being much cheaper to build means you can build more of them, which is awesome. And more is better, because pretty much what you want to do in religion is you want to push out as much faith as you can, go to theocracy and win. And that's what Peter does. Also, Spain, they have some bonuses to it, and then you get again the mission as a tile improvement, and I'm not that much a fan of it, to be honest, actually. I don't think that Philip is that amazing in the religion game. I think that is a mischaracterization of what he is good at. He is the one for domination and not religion.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's what I feel. But Gandhi, again, is pretty good, because you get quite a lot of extra fate in the beginning of the game where it counts, because of that special ability that you get +5 fate for each civilization that they have met as founder of religion. and is not currently at war. So that's going to be quite a large boost of fate in the beginning, which you can use to explode that a little bit.
You know, the only placement on this list that I feel qualified to speak about is the Congo, because they are on the Tier D bad list, and I would like to make a case why that is correct, and that is that they can't have their own religion. So, good job. That is the correct placement for them, and that's about as far as my religion knowledge goes for Civ 6. Signing out, guys.
By the rules of the game, they are not allowed to win the religious game, unfortunately.
So they need a special list for them, huh? Like beyond tier bad. We need tier non-applicable.
Tier Congo.
They should not be on the list. Yeah, Congo tier.
The Congo tier. I really love that, Civ. That's one of the most unique ones, in my opinion. So, Dan, what do you think about this list setup?
Yeah, I think I spoke to Saladin's, the genius design of Saladin and how he's perfection when it comes to both a science and a religious victory. I'm talking him up so much, I think I might have to go play a game of him this afternoon. I'm actually getting really keen on it, just sitting here thinking about it. Anyway, the other save I wanted to give a shout out that is in the S tier for best tier. Gave him a shout out earlier. I feel people overlook Poland because Poland was the first DLC save that we had. And historically, they're not like a powerhouse like an Alexander the Great or a Cyrus or anything like that. But I do think that we have a good S tier here. I can't think off the top of my head of anyone that I would bump in any certain terms up this list for a religious victory. Maybe no. Looking at it, I think it's about right. I think I like all five in the S tier, and then the A tier, which is John Curtin, Cleopatra, and Harold. Harold in a religious victory. Norway in a religious victory. I don't know.
Yeah, the Stave Church.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Stave. I think it's actually.
I guess is that enough though to justify that position? I mean, this is the guy that knows the absolute least, but I guess that'd be the same argument as like the ziggurat.
I mean, and of course I'm gonna bump one guy up that I always bump up. It's gotta be Germany. They're good for religion as well, because they can have the extra district, which means that even though you're building your holy site, you can still improve your nation super easily. It's Germany is overpowered, guys. They belong higher. Not S tier, but I would definitely put them on A tier.
They're definitely the highest rank, though, if you look at all the tiers. They're A tier in two of the victory types, which is great, and B tier, which is good, in the other two. They're not crap tier in any of them, or even average.
That's probably a good point.
But the thing is, they're never in the S tier, which I find strange.
Yeah, I mean, is our best argument for them they'd be in the A tier, the S tier for both potentially domination and science? Or is that overkill?
I would put them there.
You would?
I would put them in domination and science S tier and religion A tier, and I'm going to keep my argument for the culture victory till we discuss that one.
Yeah, domination for sure. Science, I'd have to try playing them in a science victory to know.
Okay, so let's wrap this little discussion up kind of quickly about the cultural victory, because that's the only one we didn't talk about so far. Valter, you did your whole last strategy session on winning a cultural victory, so you are probably very versed in this and some of the more technical natures, and actually could probably give us some good thoughts on this. So leading the list is Victoria. We've got America up there, France, and the Congo. I like seeing the Congo there because they get a lot from relics and things. Those are very powerful. Victoria's got her museums. France, she's a chateaus. Those give culture, is that right?
And wonders give double.
Oh, yeah, that's very powerful. What's I can never remember Teddy's bonuses for the life of me. What's he got that's called?
Teddy get the film studio, which is amazing because it will give you plus 100% pressure from this city towards other civilizations that have reached the modern era.
Whoa.
So once you reach
watch our movies.
Yeah, they're aggressively pushing their movies to them.
Wow, Teddy is all about film. Okay. Then, I mean, is there anyone we want to kick out of that tier? I mean, Victoria's museums, I think those are actually decently powerful, unless, Valter, you know some technicalities that I don't.
No, they are really good because they are automatically themed.
Yeah.
and artifacts are really good. And it's the same reason why Congo is so good. They get a lot of bonuses from having artifacts.
A lot, isn't it? Like, do you get culture, gold? There's no food from that, though, right? It's culture.
Food as well, I believe. It's two food, two production, and four gold.
Jeez, that's why I need to get into another game of the Congo. I really like
that. Beyond that, they also get double great writer points, great artist points, great musician points. So they are really good. And they have five slots in their palace, of course, as well for all those things. Oh, so they're really good for cultural. I'm going to make Dan happy because I want to bump Peter up to the S tier as well.
Where's he sitting?
You're such a bro today, Wouter. I love it.
Oh, he's sitting the whole way down the B tier. You're moving him from B to S?
I mean, I played as him in the Sivcast challenge yesterday. And the reason the Lavra is super cheap to build, and it gives you one great writer point, one great artist point, and one great musician point as well. So you can, above like a lot of other people, you get those 3 points per turn. And you can then build a theater square as well and get those points as well. So you can get a lot more great people. Above of that, you are also gaining a lot of faith, which you can use to buy those great people earlier and snatch them away from other people. I think he should be a lot higher in this list.
That's fair. That's totally fair. Does Germany really get the B tier there?
Yeah, I would go for A tier because they're awesome, but not S tier, unfortunately.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think A to B is pretty well suited for them. China gets those Eurekas for their civics tree, but I don't know that how much of that really equates over to their cultural victory.
The Great Wall gives culture bonus too.
True.
And tourism later on in the trajectory. But I believe that's not enough. It's good in defending against tourism, but it's not that great in winning a cultural game.
One save who I would definitely think bumping up from A to S, and I'm surprised they're on A, is Pedro in Brazil. I think that, culture is the one victory type they're geared for. If you're playing Brazil, I don't think you're playing any other victory type.
I would go for the science, but culture definitely works as well.
I agree. That seems weird that he's down there. I mean, Voucher, to your point, I mean, he's very sciencey too, but he didn't even make it where he was on the B tier for science. So it's like, that's a little bit of a mixed bag. Poor guy. He deserves a bump. Let's give him
He definitely deserves a bump here as well for cultural. That's absolutely true.
So who ranked in at our very bottom? The Aztecs, Alexander, Norway, and Jadwiga. So let's see, Aztecs. What's their weird tile improvement? Doesn't that give some culture? I mean, it's not, or is it religion, actually? They're little.
They have a unique building, which replaces, I think, it's the arena that it replaces.
Yeah, that sounds right.
It gives amenities, fate, and great general points instead of just amenities.
See, I always think of him as culture instead of faith, but you see, that really doesn't help him since he fell in the C tier in religion. So, sorry, bud, your thing's not that great.
Yeah.
It is called I don't know what it's called. Oh, the Tlachtli. There you go.
Something like that. I'm not even going to try it this time.
Yeah, I'm giving up. Well, I think that was a pretty comprehensive discussion of this list. Do you guys have any other parting thoughts before we move on for it? We actually got a good conversation out of this.
Congo tier, baby. It's a thing.
Congo tier?
Yeah. Okay. Add Congo tier.
That's where I fall in the religion area. So if you need to find me anywhere, Congo tier. Okay, Dan, do you want to give us a little bit of a rundown of your historical minute for this week?
Sure, since I was foisted so much love upon Saladin, I thought I would give a bit of a shout out to Saladin, who was the first sultan of United Egypt and Syria in what was known as the Ayyubid dynasty. Now, you guys are familiar with the Crusades, right?
Yes,
Crusades in the Levant. I think that what people probably know Saladin best for is for being the leader who was able to repel the Third Crusade. He basically was working to unify the Muslim states around Egypt and Saudi Arabia and the west parts of kind of the Arabian Plateau there in an effort to try and repel the invasion, specifically of the Holy Land into Jerusalem. And Saladin actually was responsible for negotiating Arabic control of Jerusalem from Richard I, Richard the Lionheart of England, during the Third Crusades there. He was victorious in expelling a lot of the Christians at the Battle of Hattin. And he is actually probably goes down in history as one of the, one of the most prominent, one of the most significant, one of the most militarily proficient leaders of a unified Arabic empire at the time. Interestingly enough, he, in Civ 6, focuses on science and religion, and they were huge parts of his empire. He worked to use Islam, which is only about 5 centuries into existence at that time as an organized religion. He worked to use Islam as kind of the unifying aspect of this Ayyubid dynasty in this Arabic empire. And he used that as kind of the us versus them, whatever you want to call it, aspect of his empire when it came to fighting against the Europeans. So that's Saladin. I did want to give a quick mention to something that was emailed into Kyle. Justin emailed into Kyle to say, and I'll read this with a heavy dose of shame in my voice, that, I'll read the whole thing. Also, Justin says, Dan had that quiz game about which leaders ruled as kings. Muvemba Anzinga, which is the Congolese leader, technically was called king since he adopted the title King Afonso I after contact with European nations, specifically Portugal, I believe. So Justin, I looked this up. And you're correct. And I'm just going to hang my head in shame here for a little bit and just award all the points to Wouter and Kyle, because I'm pretty sure at least one of you might have said, I think it was Kyle who might have said was the Congo guy a king. It stands out in my mind, but the answer is yes. And so, Kyle, I guess I should have done more research. I'm sorry.
Well, everyone, you can email into civcastpodcast@gmail.com and tell us if Dan is redeemed or not. And we'll see if he survives next week's episode in one piece.
Yeah, just keep mailing whenever Dan is wrong. We love to hear those kinds of things.
Love it. I'm sure my students love it too.
I should start a wall of shame behind me, Dan, whenever we get on video. I'm kidding. I would never
go
do
for
that.
It.
I would not do that. I want to say that stands out in my mind for him being king. It's a very interesting story. I love the Congo in this game. I'm so glad they're in there. That was also a big community rallying or cry out to get them in this game, I believe. Is that right? I think that they were like,
I'm not sure,
one of those demanded ones in Civ 5 or something. I think that's
how I'm happy they're here though.
Yeah, they're really cool and unique. I could play them. For me, it's Germany and the Congo all day. Let's see. And Wouter, do you want to give us your little strategy tip here?
Yeah, so I've been thinking a little bit what I want to go to with these strategy tips. And, you know, we like lists here. And we have a huge list in the Civilization game, and that is the Civilization leader list. So I decided to give my point of view on every leader. Every week I will treat one of them and tell a little bit about what I think they're good at, because every leader has something going for them at least. And I will give a little bit of an idea on how I would play the game, and maybe you will get some new insights on it. And because I'm a little bit crazy and I don't like to do things a standard way, I'm going to start at the bottom, and that is Victoria. Well, Victoria is, as of the latest patch, really, really strong all of a sudden. She gets her Royal Navy Dockyard, which gets the extra trade route, even if you already have a commercial hub. So for Victoria, no matter what kind of victory type you're trying to do, I would suggest settling as much coastline as possible and build those commercial hubs and dockyards, if possible, next to each other as well, combined with the city center in a nice triangle. So you get a lot of gold out of that and a lot of trade routes. This means you can utilize coast even where normally it wouldn't be viable to make a cool city, because the dockyard itself has a couple of buildings that you can build in there, like lighthouse, which will give you really nice food production as well, so that actually those cities become quite viable, even though normally they would just starve to death because they don't have good tiles to work. Another thing that works really well together with Victoria is there is a policy in, I believe, Naval Tradition, that doubles the gold bonus from your adjacency bonus from your dockyard. And if you build a shipyard in those dockyards, they convert that adjacency bonus to extra production. So if you have a dockyard, a commercial hub, and a city center in a triangle, it's really easy to get +8 gold together with that policy of an adjacency bonus with your dockyard, which translates then into 8 extra production as well. And that is really, really strong. A small city on the coast can become really powerful with that, just doing that. So, and if you don't want to go for a domination victory, then I would suggest a cultural victory and just build British museums everywhere, fill it with artifacts, just push out as many of those as you can, you will win.
So, Valtor, can you reiterate, would you say that that city center, commercial hub, and harbor you need together, or Royal Navy Dockyard?
Yeah, because the dockyard gets an adjacency bonus from a commercial hub and a city center. So if you place the commercial hub, the dockyard, and the city center in a nice triangle together, they boost each other and generate tons and tons of gold.
Thank you. I'm glad you kind of clarified that, because in general, that was something I had seen some confusion on Reddit of, especially before they buffed it with the patch. There was some confusion there. I saw in a couple posts of like, well, how does this work out with the harbor bonuses and all of that? So I think now with all those buffs that we got in the last one, that is a very, very powerful combo and really makes Victoria powerful. I like Absolutely. This idea, Valtor. This is great. You're going to give some tips on each one. I love it.
I'm glad you like it.
Well, that about wraps it up for this week's episode. We are going to be coming very soon, like I said, over to YouTube and Twitch as soon as I get this crazy dead PC that I've got in my room. It died when I tried to build it. So as soon as that guy's fixed, hopefully tomorrow, we will be setting up for our first live stream. You guys can join us in the chat. That way we can actually show you these lists as we're talking about them. If you're someone that wants to catch the show later on YouTube, you'll be able to see what we were looking at as well. So you guys know where to find us by now, right? Well, if you don't, we are over at kyledempsterstudios.com /civcast. That's where you can find all the links to the show. And we got a nice submission form at the bottom. You can send us your thoughts on the episode, send us suggestions on anything. We're always reading through those emails. And like Dan did, we discussed it here on the show. Valtor's strategy session for the last month is up. Dan's going to be doing his end of the month historical extra. We're probably recording that next weekend. So, Dan, do you want to give everyone a little tease what your historical extra is going to be about, if you know?
Sure. I am going to be attacking the Middle East, and specifically one of the leaders in Civ 6 from the Middle East. I will leave it maybe one of the more... Gosh, how do I want to put this? One of the more muscular, bro-ish leaders from the Middle East.
I have no idea who that is.
Who could it be?
You'll have to tune in. You'll have to tune in and wait for the new episode. So that'll be over on our Patreon for all of our awesome subscribers. That is patreon.com/civcast. Again, thank you, thank you, thank you, everyone that made it possible for us to do the live stream. We are going to be, well, actually, we are over on Twitter right now. I am at KyleDempster7. Dan is at DanTheMax. Valtor is at Innocentia69. And the show is at Civ_cast. I already said the email, but just to, you know, really rub it in there, it is civcastpodcast@gmail.com. And please, please, please go sub to our subreddit, where people are sharing awesome info and they're posting all their Civcast challenge results. And that is just our Civcast. So until next week, everyone, when we are hopefully live streaming the show, just one more turn. You're listening to Civcast on the Kyle Dempster Studios Network. For more shows like this, visit kyledempsterstudios.com.